It's fall at JCPenney. Time to refresh your closet. This Thursday through Monday, get Levi's lowest prices of the season on 514 straight fit jeans for guys, $36.99. And select Arizona booties for her for $35.99. Plus, save an additional 50% off clearance prices already reduced by 60 to 80%. And get an extra $10 off with your coupon. Hurry in now. JCPenney. Coupon valid 10-5 to 10-9. Levi's and other brands excluded from coupon. Clearance selections vary by store while supplies last. Savings off regular and original prices. Intermediate markdowns may have been taken. See store or jcp.com for details. Season 1st, 9/27 to 10/18.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 185 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder, subscribe to the podcast there, leave a review once you're on that page, and find us on audioboom.com. Log on to normantranscript.com, check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site. You can see all my Thunder coverage there. I'm on every day of the week, as are all Locked On podcasts, Monday through Friday. Friday episode today before we hit the weekend. Thunder Rockets starting off on Sunday night, 8 p.m. Central Time. Game 2 is going to be Wednesday night, so I'm going to be in Houston for a long time. I'm leaving for Houston on Friday night to get in there, and then I'm just going to be staying in that city where I'm going to be so hot. It's so hot in Houston, and I'm genuinely unexcited to be in that absurd heat and even more ridiculous humidity for 6 days. I apologize if I have Houston listeners, but you know what? You guys should know that your city is unreasonably humid. When we were there, when was it? When were the Thunder there? Like March 20-something, 26, whatever it was. It was like somewhere between 100 and a million degrees. I refuse to believe otherwise. And I was dying. I'm going to bring 48 pairs of clothes. And I'm not packing a bag this time. I'm not checking a bag. It is carrying on big time. It is carrying on big time. So preview the series today. I'm going to be back podcasting after the series on Sunday. Preview the series today. I got a couple of guests. I figure, why not? Series preview. We're going to go Jonathan Fagan from the Houston Chronicle first. And then I spoke to Jonathan for about 20 minutes previewing the series. And then I am bringing on Calvin Watkins from ESPN, who I spoke to for about 40 more previewing the series. So you can get a really long series preview. Talk about Russ and how to guard Russ and Harden and how to guard Harden and keys to the series and if Kanter is playable and the Rockets' three-point shooting and Robertson guarding, you know, Harden and all these, a lot of different things. We touch on a lot of different topics, all the way down to weird non-basketball stuff and who could be the best quotes of the series and all that kind of stuff. So a lot of basketball, a lot of Thunder, a lot of Rockets. Before we get started, before I get into my conversation with Jonathan, I just want to tell you guys about SeatGeek, because buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show you want to go to, and none of those older ticket sites want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. SeatGeek is always the first place I go to look for tickets to a game or concert. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I just used it the other day to look at tickets for when Tom Petty is coming to town next week. Everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for sports and music fans. SeatGeek does all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites and ensuring that you get the best possible deal. SeatGeek does all the work, and you save the time and money. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, enter the promo code LO Thunder, that's LO like locked on, and SeatGeek is going to give you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LO Thunder today. Quick break and then we'll get to Jonathan and Calvin.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, so I'm here with Jonathan Fagan. Jonathan, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. I'm ready for, 82 games is long. I'm ready for playoff. I'm sure it's even longer for you. Like, I had, I had the Westbrook stuff to cover and all of that. Like, Houston's been locked into the three seed since what? Since, like, it seems like November.
Yeah, it's been a while of games that mean nothing. And, you know, not only, as you know, you try and write about those, you try and find things that might portend to what's happening in the playoffs, but the team themselves, they you can't fool them. They know, well, this game means nothing. And that's not a real good way to play professional sports. It's almost, a lot of these games were a lot, even though Mike D'Antoni kept playing regulars, they were a lot like preseason football games where you kind of knew this doesn't matter.
Yeah, you know, speaking of which, something that I'm curious about, it's like last night, I mean, James Harden was playing the exact same rotation basically every single game, regardless of the situation, regardless of what's going on in the game. I mean, even the last game of the regular season is a perfect example of that. What were your thoughts on that? You know, Harden playing a ton of minutes during blowouts and all of that, and you know, like especially with the concentration on rest and him with the wrist and all that stuff.
Well, it's like a lot of things with the Rockets. D'Antoni and Harden are very much on the same wavelength about a lot of things. And Harden is a guy who just wants to play. He wants to practice. He doesn't like to ever take a day off. He doesn't like to change his routine in any way. He shoots at the same time, which is a ton of NBA players, that shoots at the same time, does the same drills. You know, his off season, he plays his way into shape. And you know, everything with him is about being on the floor. He doesn't like to miss games. And, you know, he and Trevor Ariza just haven't missed games for years. And D'Antoni's been that way. You know, he feels like if I need to rest guys, I'll back off practice. I'll cancel practice, not hold one at all, rather than the games. The game is a better workout than the practice would be. But they do also say, you know, he's 27. Get back with us when he's 31. You know, Nene didn't play the second half of back-to-backs this year. He took days off, and D'Antoni made him take some days off. So their point is always, it's different for different guys. Even late in the season, they held out Pat Beverly, Clint Capella, Lou Williams, Eric Gordon, because they felt those guys had different needs. Trevor Ariza, who hates to ever miss a game. Other guys, obviously Harden would be the most obvious, just like to grind away. I was a little surprised, though, in the last game of the season when they came back in the fourth quarter. But the Rockets wanted a game that would be like a dress rehearsal. And for the reasons you mentioned before, they weren't. You know, they kind of were going through the motions a little bit. So they wanted one game where they weren't just going through the motions. And they went to their postseason rotation, pretty much guys going in and coming out as they will, barring foul trouble or other issues in the first round of the playoffs.
You ready for Patrick Beverley versus Russell Westbrook? What round is this? 73? Does that sound right?
It's a bunch. I don't know. I don't think that they think of it that way anymore. It's like old news.
I'll tell you what, though. I don't think Russell likes Patrick Beverley at all. Like, I don't think it's necessarily a personal thing, but you know how it is. Players dislike the basketball player a lot, and I have nothing against the person, but dislike the basketball player. And I don't think Russell likes going up against Patrick Beverley. He gets frustrated a lot against him, especially in that first game of the year, which the Thunder actually won. When second game of the year, actually, it was that close one they lost. He was getting really frustrated with Beverley. He tends to be frustrated with him after games. He normally loves going up against point guards. He's made a couple of snide remarks throughout his career about how, you know, if there's a point guard, he feels like he can go at him because he's so often guarded by wings, especially now with Kevin Durant gone. I mean, opposing teams just put, you know, he's got Kawhi Leonard guarding him as opposed to, you know, Tony Parker when they go against the Spurs, which is a very big difference. And when he feels like, I think, because he's big and he's fast and all that, and he feels like when there's a point guard on him, he's good to go. But I don't know. I think Patrick Beverley might be not that Russell Westbrook ever thinks anybody's shutting him down, but I think Patrick Beverley might be the exception to that. I think he frustrates him a little bit.
Well, you know, well, frustrates is a really strong word, but there are Beverly's the type that there are moments and stretches where he does that against the best point guards. He doesn't shut them down, or, you know, they, in a long series, Steph Curry's going to be Steph Curry. Russ Westbrook is going to be Westbrook. That's who they are, and no defender takes that away. It's kind of the difference between great offensive players and great defensive players. You know, James Harden averaged like 37 against the Spurs this year. But Kawhi is a fantastic defensive player. But if you have some moments, if you coax a few extra misses or turnovers out of a guy, you did a great job. And Beverly has done that. You know, the funny thing is, and I Harden once sort of intimated this, they're kind of alike. You know, physically they're not. I mean, obviously no guard is as explosive as Russ is, and Pat Beverly wouldn't be real high on the list of irrepressible offensive forces. So they're different that way. But as they're kind of family guys who love to be on the court and off the court are different style and personality than what you see on the floor a little bit. You know, there's just some similarities, and they play with this ferociousness. It's applied in different ways, obviously, because Pat can't do the offensive things that Russ does, and nobody else does either what Russ does. But there's this ferociousness to the way they play, this super aggressive competitiveness, where they almost play as if the other guy has offended them in some sort of way. And they'll do that in game 73 and game 3 and game 7 of the playoffs. And it's just who they are and how they play. And it's, to me, I find it very similar, even though athletically they're very different.
That's actually a really good point. I think I see a lot of that. I think that makes sense. How do you think the benches line up in this series? Because Houston's is obviously different from the first couple of times these two teams play. They brought in Lou Williams, and there's the Decker injury, and you know, it's a different bench out there. But Eric Gordon is still out there. How many threes he end up with? 250, somewhere in that realm this year. I mean, he's been just hitting 246 threes for Eric Gordon, which is just crazy.
Yeah, he's been, you know what? He has struggled with his 3-point shot, but since January, but definitely since the start of February, he has struggled, and Lou Williams has shot horribly from the 3-point line. It's a real question where that used to be something the Rockets would have over the Thunder, and maybe they still do, the scoring off the bench. But to me, one of the biggest keys of the whole series is off the bench, where it's, does Nene control Cantor, and does he do it enough to where Clint Capella doesn't have to match up with Cantor, which is a really bad matchup for Capella, who's had a terrific season. In a normal year, he'd be a most improved candidate. There's between Antetokounmpo and Jokic, you know, basically it's Antetokounmpo unless they can't fit that on the award, and then they have to give it to Jokic. But Capella would be a most improved type. But he does not play well. He does not defend Cantor well. Nene has to. And then because of that, then Capella has to do well on Steven Adams. To me, that's one of the biggest keys of the whole series, and it's actually off the bench.
Yeah. That, I mean, a lot of that is just size. Like, Cantor is so good in the post. Now, I had a scout tell me that Enes Kanter is the best low post scorer in the league other than DeMarcus Cousins. Like he's so dominant in the post now, and you know, if you extrapolate his numbers over 36 minutes, he's, you know, 24 points and 12 rebounds, and his PER is like through the roof. His PER is like in the 20s. It's incredibly high. It always is. His issue is obviously, you know, they're all on the defensive end, pick and roll defense, defending in space when he has to play in situations against teams like Houston where big shoot threes and that kind of stuff. That's when he's really going to struggle. But offensively, he's a better passer than he used to be, although I think his passing has struggled the last 2 months or so. His passing has kind of gone away. But he's without a doubt a key to the series. My question is I wonder how playable he's going to be defensively in this series. Like when D'Antoni goes with those small lineups, Billy Donovan likes to switch against small lineups, as a lot of coaches do. And you can't really do that with Kanter out there. And if you're going up against a team which is happy to throw up 53-pointers or sometimes more on any given night, it's going to be really hard for Kanter to guard in that kind of series. And I think he can probably do really well offensively because he's an incredible offensive player. But I think for him specifically, something like Utah or San Antonio would have been a much more playable matchup for him on the defensive end because I just wonder what the defense is going to be like when he's out there.
Well, it would be difficult for him to switch too much because even on the second unit, with Decker out, Trevor Ariza plays as the backup four, and Ariza likes playing four offensively. He likes that better. It gets him a little more out of the corner, as we saw in the game against Oklahoma City, which was the first one when they were shorthanded. Ron Anderson was out at that time with the sprained ankle, and Ariza was at the four. From the wing, he puts the ball on the floor better, and he attacks and he drives. And, of course, he's good to be 24 feet away. He's not posting up ever in his life. So that would be difficult. It's interesting. I think it's a big key to the series because Nene is an outstanding defensive center and a strong physical one, kind of old school. And so that's what you have to be against Kanter. The defenses that the teams play, the style, the game plans, that's something we're going to be watching in game one. We kind of know what they do at this point. They do very different things against one another, which leads to some of the stats we see. But to me, the game plans defensively, that's high on the list of what to watch for the first weekend.
How have you seen is the most effective way to defend Harden? I mean, Andre Robertson has done a really good job against him. Harden only shot 31% against the Thunder during the regular season, 15% from three, a high turnover ratio, all that kind of stuff. And he's obviously got a high one against anyone, but higher than his season-long turnover ratio against the Thunder. What have you seen that's worked? Do you think there are other ways to guard him that might be more effective?
Well, the best way to guard him is not an option for most teams. It's what Golden State does, where they switch everything, and they end up with guys as big or bigger than him that he can't just bust with the first step. You know, typically when teams try to do that, he just beats the big guy. You know, they spread the floor, and he can beat anybody, you know, just with his first step, with his move. Golden State does that with Draymond Green and Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant. And so they're all either taller or bigger or both. And yet they can stay in front of him. And that way they're keeping their guys on the Rockets' three-point shooters. You know, I think the stats against Oklahoma City, his stats are a little misleading because he finished so horribly in the games in Oklahoma City, to where he's getting to the rim and missing. And, you know, if you get into the rim, you don't feel like, wow, that's the defense that stops him. So I don't think that part of it is indicative of what we'll see. But what Oklahoma City does and did, especially in that fourth game, is they help on Harden. Where the Rockets switch on Westbrook so he can still go one-on-one without a whole lot of help against him, the Rockets switch a lot. And so he's going to put up Westbrook numbers. Oklahoma City will tend to show a big man on a screen or even trap with a big man on a screen. And even when there's not a screen, they'll shade a defender over to where they'll give a little room to a Trevor Ariza or Eric Gordon to send a little help. And Harden just gives up the ball. He'll read that and move the ball. So if the Rockets' offense is working its best against a defense like that, he's going to have fewer points. But the offense should work well. They should score very well because he's read it right. And I think that's what we need to see in the beginning. Does he finish? And, of course, Roberson's great length does challenge him at the rim and does make things more difficult. You know, it's not all, oh, he just missed. That doesn't work that way. So we'll have to see if he does better against Oklahoma City's length than he has done. But I think more than that, it's how the offense itself runs. And that's kind of the story of the season. And it's interesting that when everybody else in the world wants to talk Russ and Harden and Russell, you know, MVP and stats and everything else, we haven't. But to me, what I find interesting is their jobs sort of fits for the season, and the difference in their jobs sort of fits to what's going to be the series, to where, and I'm curious if you kind of look at it the same way. To me, Russ's job this year and his achievements this year was carrying his team. Harden's job and his achievement was elevating the players around him. It's Russ is sort of the new age of point guard, the scoring, attacking point guard. Harden is old school. He's a throwback where his job is lifting those around him. And I think that's what has to be in this series because of the defensive game plans both will see.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I don't think there's any question that Harden is a better passer than Russ. I mean, there's no... I know they average the same amount of assists per 100 possessions, but there's no question in my mind Harden is the better and certainly more willing passer than Russ is. I mean,
but it's more than that. It's Russ is a terrific. I mean, you see some of the passes he can throw, and his talent is off the charts.
Those transition passes that he's able to throw. I don't know if anyone other than LeBron in the entire league can make those passes.
Yeah, I mean, doing things at high speeds and so on. But it's not so much the skill or even the willingness. There's a different sort of vision on the floor of what he sees and of what he views his job as, to where he'll have passes that aren't going to be assists, but it's just to trigger the offense that others will do. That is a big part of the D'Antoni offense and how Harden reads things. And it's just not a part of Russ's job. Russ's job is to attack, you know, sort of body blows to the defense that then he will either finish over or send the next pass. It's just different. I think Russ carries a team. Harden has to elevate those around him. And then that's what you have to do if teams are going to defend them as the Thunder and Rockets defend Westbrook and Harden.
Right. And you kind of alluded to this earlier, but I wonder in that sense how the Thunder are going to defend Harden in pick and rolls. I really do. They have a pretty aggressive pick and roll defense with their bigs, with Adams specifically. He comes up pretty high on a lot of those pick and rolls. And that last time that they played, that time in Houston when the Rockets scored 137 points, the Rockets until very late in that game had attempted only one non-paint two-pointer. Everything else was either at the rim or from three. And that one shot was a Nene buzzer beater with 0.6 seconds left on the shot clock off an inbounds. Like they got whatever shots they wanted. And they were particularly hot that game. But in my eyes, I thought the biggest issue was just that they were getting to whatever spot they wanted. They were getting standstill threes and they were getting shots at the rim. And that was pretty much it. And I think that was a lot of that had to do with swings after Harden ended up giving up the ball because he is such a good passer. He is so good at finding the right guy, not just for an assist, like you said, but for, you know, one or two or three passes early so they can find a, you know, find a reason in the corner or find somebody, you know, Capella down low or whatever it is. And I think that helps them a lot. Jonathan, I appreciate you coming on. Thanks for taking your time to talk.
Well, I enjoyed it. We'll see you this weekend.
Yes, I will see you. We'll be seeing each other a lot for the next at least week, probably a little bit more.
I think more. I think it's a long series.
What's before we go quickly? What is your series pick? Do you have one?
Yeah, I haven't really thought about it yet. I was leaning towards Rockets in seven, and because I don't want to say in six because that means winning on the road. And you know, sometimes series can be super close and be four or five games. You know, Golden State, New Orleans a few years ago was a sweep and it was an incredibly close series. I don't think there's going to be a four or five game series though. So I'll go to my gut. My initial reaction was Rockets in seven. So let's say, you know, a classic long seven game series.
Yeah. Rockets in seven. I think what I'll end up going with too. It seems to me like one of those series where Harden wins two games on his own, Westbrook wins two games on his own. There's going to be at least one Westbrook game, and there's going to be at least one Harden game in this series.
I don't see it as Harden winning games on his own because of the things we were talking about. You know, I think maybe he has one of those where he just does everything. But when he does everything, it's sometimes more about his passing. And so, and, you know, Westbrook will have one. Westbrook will have a couple of them. You know, he'll have one or two in a loss, and he'll have one or two in a win where he puts up the gigantic numbers. And, you know, to me, I think at the end of this series, a lot of it's going to be, did the Rockets rebound? If the Rockets rebound and defend and match up okay with Cantor, they should win this series. I don't think Oklahoma City scores enough for the Rockets. You know, the Rockets could be averaging 115 to 120. I don't think Oklahoma City does that. But the equalizer is the best rebounding team in the league against a team that is fairly average defensive rebounding team. If the Rockets rebound, they should win the series. But that's a big if against the best rebounding team in the league.
All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on. Next up, I'm going to be talking to Calvin Watkins of ESPN. Hold on 1 second. We'll be talking to Calvin.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
So now I'm welcoming in Calvin Watkins, ESPN, Rockets beat writer. Calvin, what's going on?
You all right?
I'm good. I'm good. Thanks for coming on, man.
No problem, man.
So let's talk about this series. This is going to be the most fun series of the first round?
Oh yeah, without a doubt. This is like a big time welterweight title fight. You know, yeah.
It's gonna be
big time.
It's gonna be Russ Harden is gonna be fun. I kind of have a theory. I don't know if this is definitely gonna happen. But I kind of have a theory that Russ's usage rate, like even compared to even compared to regular season Russ, we're gonna be like, whoa, what?
We're gonna get Russ on steroids usage rate.
Yes, yeah, basically that. Just like, okay, so because I feel like it's not just him coming to the playoffs and saying, all right, I got to do this, I got to win this on my own. Mm-hmm. I think it's more the fact that. I mean, there's part of that where I think he's going to feel like he has to shoot more because it's the postseason, that kind of stuff. But I think it's also, like, Russ can get goaded into one-on-one matchups. And mm-hmm. Houston specifically plays the type of defense, not necessarily the quality of defense, but the style of defense that mm-hmm. that Russ ends up taking a lot of shots on because they'll really mm-hmm. concede those mid-range shots. And he mm-hmm. loves taking those mid-range shots. So if he starts getting around that 14 to 18 foot area and ends up taking tons of pull-ups, you know, he took, what was it? He took 16 mid-range shots in a game against Phoenix this year in one
he
game.
He did?
Yeah. He went 4-for-16 in the first game against Phoenix this year. And like,
it would take the Rockets 2 months to take 16 mid-range shots.
Yeah. I mean, what the funny, like the difference between these two teams is that Russell Westbrook took 16 mid-range shots in a game once this year, and in the last time the Rockets and Thunder played, the Rockets took one mid-range shot, and it was that Nene buzzer beater with 0.6 seconds left on an inbounds, and that was the only mid-range shot they took in the first like three and a half quarters. Until I was so excited about that because there was nothing else entertaining about that. I mean, the Rockets were making every shot, but there was nothing else entertaining. And I was mm-hmm. so upset when Lou Williams took like a 12-foot floater, ruined everything with like 4 minutes left in the game.
The Rockets believe that a mid-range shot is boring. It's boring. Yes. It's like eating cheese pizza. It's just boring. You need like pepperoni or sausage or anchovies or something to spice it up. Mid-range shots are boring.
Yeah, well, if people say the mid-range shot is a lost art, I think the Rockets kind of think it's a lost piece of crap.
The interesting thing about that is Lou Williams, who is struggling, who has struggled going into the end of the regular season, and we talked about that, he said he will take a mid-range shot or drive to the basket to find a rhythm so he can get back to shooting threes. So there is, and every once in a while, the Rockets would take a mid-range shot. Every once in a while.
Yeah. No, that makes – I've heard other players say that too. Sometimes they'll say, you know, I'm not hitting my threes. I think J.J. Redick has said that. I'm not hitting my threes this day. I'm 0 for whatever, 1 for whatever. Let me just take a step in, see if I can hit one from 19 and try to refine the basket. and then mm-hmm. and then I'll go back out to 24.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, makes total sense. I do it. I miss when I try to find the 19 footer too, but mm-hmm. I do it. It makes sense. if you're the Rockets, how are you guarding Russell Westbrook in this series? Team-wise, what are you doing?
Well, when they've played him, they played four times in the season, regular season. What they've done is they said, Pat Beverly, you take him on one-on-one. Then sometimes they'll put Eric Gordon on Russell Westbrook. They are not a big double-team type of defense. They'll pick specific moments when they feel like they need to double team Russell Westbrook. Because they don't want Russell to feel like, oh, I'm getting double teamed every possession, so I'm gonna have to pass to somebody else. So they pick certain spots to double them. But for the most part, it's gonna be straight up Beverly, Eric Gordon. Wouldn't surprise me if James gets on him a little bit. Trevor Ariza might get on him a little bit. But for the most part, it's man on man. You do what you do, and then we'll double you in certain moments of the game to get you off the ball.
Yeah, I am so curious to see how both of these stars are going to end up being guarded. Like, I'm so curious to see how Houston guards Westbrook, and I'm honestly a little bit more curious to see how the Thunder end up guarding Harden, because
Harden's played poorly. Well, let me take it back. He shot poorly against the Thunder. I think he's like 35%.
31? Yeah, yeah. 31? It's 31 with Robertson on the floor.
Yeah. So Robertson has just been his nemesis because he's so long and lean, and he just takes so many angles away from Harden. You know, he can't really pass the way he wants to. He can't really see the basket. He can't really drive. That has been his kryptonite, Andre Robertson.
Yeah, well, with the season that Robertson's had, I think he's a lot of guys' kryptonite. Like he's had an incredible defensive season. He you think he's the best Harden defender in the league from what you've seen? I mean, you've seen all of them.
Kawhi Leonard's pretty good, but I would say Andre Robertson does not get enough credit. I feel terrible because I did my all NBA defensive team. And I did not put Andre Robertson on it. And I said, man, I was thinking about him. And I should have put him on that team because he is so good defensively. But I would still say Kawhi Leonard is number one. And I'll put Andre Robertson number two on Harden.
Who were your other forwards? I need to know because there are a lot of Thunder fans who are going to listen to this. And I just want to let you know you're going to get a lot of payment.
Yeah, I know. And I like Andre Robertson. He is very, very good at what he does. I wrote it down because I knew I was going to be asked this when it comes out at the end of June. Huh. My first team all defense was Kawhi Leonard, Draymond Green, Rudy Gobert, Pat Beverly, John Wall. My second team all defense, Paul George, Jimmy Butler, DeAndre Jordan, Chris Paul, Tony Allen. I put Tony Allen at guard instead of forward. So that was my all-defensive team.
That makes sense.
But Andre Robertson, but today, Zach Lowe has Andre Robertson on his second team on defensive team. That's what made me feel really bad. I was like, man, I should have put him on there. You know, but I didn't. But Zach Lowe had him. So
yeah,
Lowe has a vote. So I think you have a vote too. So maybe Andre Robertson will get on there despite me.
I don't have a vote.
Thank goodness.
I would have voted Robertson second team. I mean, it's hard to put him first team because first team has got to be Draymond and Kawhi with the forwards. Like,
yeah.
It has to be. You can't argue otherwise. And I think even Andre understands that. Like Andre was disappointed that he was on there as a forward and not a guard forward. He thought he was going to be on there as a guard because like Draymond is on there as a forward center.
Yeah.
And so you can kind of massage it and put him there as center, put him there forward on all. And yeah, that's more relevant for all league than it is for all defense because obviously Gobert is going to be your first team center. But I think Andre was a little disappointed because I think if he's a guard, you could – he's first of all, there's more flexibility. Now, all of a sudden, there are eight spots he can fit into instead of four, two teams. And I think he thought he had a good shot at first-team guard. And I don't know if he's too optimistic about his shot at first-team forward.
Yeah.
But I think he'll make it, though.
Yeah, I think
he'll make it.
He will, despite me not putting him on there. But I think he will. No, I really – he is very good. He doesn't get enough credit for how good of a defender he is.
Well, that's because you're not putting him on all defense.
But, you know, the other problem is, you know, the problem when you put these teams together is, you know, obviously we cover a team in the West. So I see the Western Conference more than I see the East. So maybe sometimes you overcompensate for the other conference just because you haven't seen them, you know. Like last year, I did the All-NBA team, and the two times I saw Toronto, it was against the Rockets, and they were just mediocre. And I'm like, what's all the hype with DeRozan and Lowry? But I know they're very good players. It's just that the two times they played against the Rockets, they were just average players. I think the Rockets came back and won a game. They were down like 18 and won a game in Toronto. And then in Houston, I think the Rockets might have flipped the series. But that doesn't necessarily mean just because they were mediocre against Houston that they're mediocre players. It's just that when I saw them, they were just whatever. So sometimes you have to like dig deeper from what you saw to make sure that this guy is really good. And Andre Robinson is very, very good. I mean, he's damn good in defending James Harden. But is he really good defending other players? Yes, he is. It's just that I just didn't put him on my second team. I wish there was a third team, and I probably should have put him on that. But there wasn't, so maybe next year.
I wonder with defensively, I wonder what the pick and roll coverages are going to be against Harden. Because during the regular season, the Thunder play pretty aggressive pick and roll, send the bigs up pretty high. And I talked about this with Jonathan a little bit. Like they send the bigs up pretty high, and sometimes they'll struggle on those rotations after, especially with teams who move the ball well around the perimeter. They'll give up threes. They'll give up some shots at the rim because of that. And I wonder, in a seven-game series, that's when you can change stuff. It's really hard. You know, you're playing Houston, and you're on a back-to-back, and it's really hard to adjust to try to figure out, all right, how do we change things against James Harden? You're not going to change your scheme. You're not going to change your defensive system. It's just not something that NBA teams do. In a seven-game series, you do that kind of stuff. You can, you've got time to practice. You've got off days. You've got no back-to-backs. Game one is on Sunday. Game two isn't even until Wednesday. They're going to have two days for opportunities to practice in between there. Both teams are. So there are going to be a lot of easy ways to adjust, a lot of easy ways to scheme. And I wonder exactly how the heck they're going to defend him schematically, especially in pick and rolls, because that is going to – if they do a good job in that, that gives them a chance to win the series. And it's not just limiting Harden scoring in pick and rolls. It's limiting all the threes that come out of his pick and rolls when he gets into the lane and keeping him out of the middle and all that kind of stuff. And obviously Robertson's individual performance is going to be like that, but it's also going to be the team defense aspect. You know, are guys pulling over properly when he gets into the lane? Are they going to stay at home on the Rockets shooters? Or are they going to help and potentially give up a lot of threes? Like I'm so curious to see what they're going to end up doing.
I would say whatever they were doing, and yes, the bigs stay high, they have messed up James Harden. But one of the things that has occurred over the last, I'd say, 8 to 10 games is that Clint Capella and Nene, as rollers, have been outstanding in the pick-and-roll game with James Harden. And I know the Thunder, when they watch the tape, the coaches, when they see the tape, they're going to see that. So it'll be interesting to see if the bigs – for the Thunders, stay with the bigs of the Rockets just because of how well Capella and Nene have been performing over the last couple of weeks. Now, it's hard to change up what you do, you know, because especially at this point in the season, because the system, the scheme they put on Harden has worked, I think. And the last game he played, he had a pretty nice game. But for the most part, that scheme has really kind of slowed him down a little bit. Earlier we were talking about Russell Westbrook is going to put up 1,000 shots. James Harden might do the same thing too, you know, because James Harden's probably thinking, "Oh, you think Russell Westbrook's the MVP, huh?" And he's gonna go off too. So, and it wouldn't surprise me if James forces the issue just a little bit, try to split the double teams. He's pretty good at that at times. So it's going to be a as they say, a chess match throughout this entire series, especially with how you defend James and Russ.
What do you think? I know this is a vague question, but I'll leave it intentionally vague. What do you think is the key to this series? Like, what if the Thunder win or if the Rockets? I assume you think the Rockets will win, and if you do, mm-hmm. I do too. So if the Thunder win the series, mm-hmm. or if the Rockets just destroy them in the series, what do you think would be the key for either one of those teams? Like, that would bring the Rockets to a victory in 4 or 5. That's their key, or the Thunder swinging it to their advantage.
I don't know who else can score for the Thunder in terms of them keeping up with the Rockets. Because the Rockets are going to score about 120, 125. We know that. That's, you know, I don't know if Russell Westbrook, he's going to get his points regardless, because he's already got 35 against them. I don't know who else can score for the Thunder to keep up with the Rockets on the offensive end. And to me, that hurts them. They need another route. Talking about this, matter of fact, me and Jonathan were talking about this last night. We were like, the Thunder need another scorer. And I said, he's playing in Oakland, you know? and that's nothing against what they currently have. Because I do like Steven Adams. I do like Oladipo. But they need another scorer to keep up with the Rockets. And that's what hurts them in this series. Russ can do whatever he wants, and that's fine. But he doesn't have what Harden has. Harden's got these outside shooters and Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, and Lou Williams off the bench. He's got good pick and roll players in the name Capella. Trevor Reese has been really good. He's shooting that corner three. So he's got so many weapons. And I think Russ does too, because people have said the numbers are about the same with Russell's teammates in comparison to Harden's teammates. But I would just say, numbers aside, Harden's got a better team. He's got more accomplished scorers in comparison to Westbrook. And I think that's the key. Westbrook does not have that other – he doesn't have – if Russell Westbrook is Batman, he doesn't have Superman, you know. And he needs a Superman, or he needs the Flash, or he needs somebody to help him. And he doesn't have enough to help him and help the Thunder keep up with the Rockets. And to me, that's the key, the series. He doesn't have help.
Batman's a good one for Russell, because Batman's not actually a superhero. Russell could secretly be Batman. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he just didn't sleep at night and just ran around the city beating guys up.
He has so much energy. It's crazy how much energy he has.
He's like that all the time, man. Like, he doesn't sleep.
I wonder if he drinks coffee when he gets up in the morning. You think he drinks coffee?
I think coffee drinks Russell Westbrook. That's what I think. That's how coffee wakes up in the morning. It has a sip of Russell Westbrook's blood, and that's how it wakes up in the morning. That's my explanation.
That's pretty good.
I don't know if he drinks coffee. I've never asked him if he drinks coffee. I've never really assumed. He either doesn't need coffee, or he drinks way too much coffee, and those are the only options here.
You know how players take a nap after shooting rounds? I wonder if he takes a nap.
I don't think he does.
You think he takes naps?
No, I don't think he naps. He's just up all day.
I've talked to some
guys about their napping schedules. There's some guys like Jeremy Grant, for example, is like an obsessive mm-hmm. napper. Mm-hmm. He studies like REM sleep and he times.
Really?
He times his naps so that he goes through. So he goes through specific amounts of REM cycles, and like, he's an obsessive napper. He naps at the same times, and like he's a really, really obsessive napper. I don't think Russell's a napper. I could be wrong, actually, but I don't. Royce probably knows better than me, just because he's been covering the team for longer. But I don't think Russell's a napper. No, I don't think he.
Wow,
I've never. He's like a spider in that I've never seen him sleep. You know, they say spiders sleep. I'm like, I've never seen one sleep, and they're always moving. So I don't know.
I'm going to ask, this is probably someone on the Thunder that I know. I'm going to say this. You think Russell Westbrook takes naps? I know James Harden takes naps. I know that for a fact, because I've talked to Harden about that, like briefly, like during the Super Bowl, the traffic was a nightmare here in Houston. So I asked Harden one time, I said, hey, did you have to leave your house earlier to get to the arena on game day because the Rockets had three games Super Bowl week. And he said, yeah, I had to leave like 20 minutes earlier and messed up my nap time. So, okay. So I know he takes naps. So I'm interested to see if Batman takes naps.
That's like, you a baseball fan?
Yeah, I like baseball. Yeah, it's a good,
like,
it's a good game.
Was it Ron Guidry who used to?
Oh, look at you. Ron Guidry, the Yankees. Look at you.
I'm a Yankee fan. So,
are you? Oh, so am I. Okay, no.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Oh, because I'm from New York, so I'm a Yankee fan.
I'm from New York. Well, I guess cats, yeah. I guess so, yeah.
Yeah. There's not many cats in Oklahoma.
There are cats in New York. That would make sense. Yeah.
There you go. But Ron Guidry, I think, used to nap like until like 30 minutes before the first pitch.
Wow.
Which sounds insane. Like, that's like part of like the legend of Ron Guidry. But I feel like it's one of those things where, like, nowadays when they're monitoring players' bodies and they have better training regimens and all that kind of stuff, nowadays we will be like, you're not doing that, Ron. Like, that's not a thing. That definitely didn't help you.
I think it does. I nap before every game.
Oh, well, I think napping helps. I don't think waking up and throwing a pitch 30 minutes later helps. I think you need a little bit more time than that.
Man, well, he's the Gator, man. The Gator, he's good.
you do naps. I do occasional naps between shoot around and on the road. I'll do it because I'm so tired. Like, taking the 6 a.m. flight in to try to get to practice the next day. I'll do naps those days. Back to backs. I'll do a nap on a back to back usually for an hour or something like that.
Yeah,
that's my go to.
Well, traffic is so bad in Houston that I'll take a nap, but because I'll rush home after shoot around, so that way I'll try to get home at like 12:30 and take a nap to about 2:30 and then get ready to go to the game, so I try to do that. I need about an hour and a half, 2 hour nap.
So you talked about the Thunder getting a second scorer. That's kind of what you think they need to do. I guess your implication is that we'd have to kind of be Oladipo, right? I mean, I guess Adams was great in the playoffs last year, but Adams is he's not a high volume scorer. He's got some moves, he's got a hook shot and he's got a floater, and he's a better passer than I think he gets credit for. But if you're gonna have a guy who's gonna put up 18 a game in this series and help the Thunder to win, like, that's gonna be Oladipo.
Oh yeah, no doubt. I mean, there are times I watch him, I go, man, I can see why they made the trade, And there are other times you see he's still growing as a basketball player. But if he can show out in this series, then we might be going back and forth for a while, And Steven Adams gives the Rockets fits, too, in the post. And so, like I said, if Oladipo turns into the Flash, hey, we go 6-7 games. Maybe we can. But like I said, there are times where I look at him and I go, dude, what are you doing out there? And other times I look at him and go, yeah, you can play a little bit. You're okay. You're going to be all right. But I don't know. I don't know which one you're going to get in this series.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing with Oladipo is, like, every once in a while, he will have, and it's not just a quarter or a game or something like that. Sometimes it's for a play. You see him for a play, and he goes in, he has that really nice spin move, which he doesn't use very often at all. And he goes hard at the rim, and he makes a move, but it's a spin move, or he crosses someone over, and he explodes to the rim, and he has a strong finish, whether it's a dunk or a layup, or just him getting fouled. Like, and you'll think, man, he is physically capable of doing that more often than he does it. And then he doesn't do it very often. Like, he almost never gets to the line now, which is in part because they use him as a spot-up shooter next to Russ, and he just doesn't handle the ball that much. But even when he's with the bench unit, like, he's not running a ton of pick-and-roll. Samaje Christensen's handling the ball a decent amount. He's not running a ton of pick-and-roll. He's not going to the rim that often. When he does it, you think he's good at it. But he's kind of more passive than you'd expect someone who has his – I mean, he's a great athlete. He's been in the dunk contest. Mm-hmm. He's a great athlete. And
he is.
And he has, every once in a while, he'll rise for one of these dunks where you're like, oh my goodness, that's crazy. But he just doesn't show it off as much as you'd expect someone who's that great of an athlete to show it off.
He's a terrific player. I mean, I really like him. Now, you know, it's just part of the maturity in his game. And I'm sure maybe he's deferring a lot to Westbrook, probably, especially the way this season has gone. So I'm sure he's like, okay, I'm going to just back off a little bit, let Russ do what Russ does. But like I said, I don't know which one you're going to get. And when you look at the numbers, I'm not even looking at usage rate. I mean, and he's not shooting badly against the Rockets, but Russ has taken 103 shots against the Rockets. Oladipo shot 62. That's such a major difference between, you know, those two guys. Like, when I look at the Rockets' shot differential against the Thunder, like, Harden's taken 70 shots, Eric Gordon's taken 63. You know? So it's not that bad. It's not that out of whack. You know what I'm saying? So even Ron Anderson, who's only played in 3 of the 4 games, he's taken 39. So, you know, the Rockets are not totally relying on Harden. I mean, they are, but they aren't. But that's why I wonder who else can score for this Oklahoma City team to help them in this first round series.
Yeah, it's not just the shots either. It's like mm-hmm. it's the touches. Uh-huh. It's, I mean, you look at some games, like Russell Westbrook leads the league in touches per game. Not shocking. James uh-huh. Harden is actually, but James Harden is second in touches per uh-huh. game. Uh-huh. It's kind of just what they're doing with those touches, which is interesting. I think Russell's like 101 per game and Harden's like 99 per game or something like that. Uh-huh. But it's interesting because they both run, in some ways, they're kind of like bizarro versions of each other, these two teams, you know? Like the Rockets run, they both run everything through their lead guard. Like everything goes through Harden, but the Rockets I think are an underrated defensive team actually. I mean, they're not great or anything, but they're better than people say. People say they're all offense and no defense. I don't think they're no defense. They're
a pretty good defensive team. They're middle of the pack in the league. I mean, they're middle of the pack. That's okay.
Right, yeah. Right. And they've been better than that since Beverly came back from – they're, what, 11th since Beverly came with Patrick Beverly in the lineup? If you look at those first 11 games or whatnot, they're like 11th mm-hmm. over that time. So that's fine. I mean, that's perfectly solid when you're a historically good offense. They're the fourth best offense or third best offense of the last decade. And, I mean, that's perfectly fine. But they're kind of bizarro versions of each other with the Thunder – the Thunder run everything through one guy. He takes all the shots, and they win because of defense. And the Rockets run everything through one guy. He's a more evenly balanced player, and they win because of offense. And it's like they're two different, you know, and they're two guys who have known each other since they were kids that are from L.A. It's like it's just mm-hmm. they're weird, like edited versions of each other.
And an interesting thing is, the fans in OKC, I think, are louder than the fans in Houston. And people in Houston probably won't like to hear that, but it's true. Maybe because that arena, the way it's designed, just makes it seem louder. But there's so much disdain for Pat Beverly. You know, they just hate him. And then because of what happened with him and Westbrook a couple of years ago, but now Westbrook and Beverly, they're not boys, but now they like each other in a sense because James Harden is close to Westbrook, and he said, you know, Beverly's my boy. He didn't mean anything by it, by bumping your knee and you getting hurt. I think it was 4 years ago in the playoffs, or three, it might have been 3.5 years ago, whenever it was. And apparently Westbrook said, okay, we good. You know, so yeah, these teams are just like destined to play. This is like the perfect first round series to have.
What's funny about that is that, like, Westbrook and Beverly, I don't think Westbrook like. I mean, I when I say I don't think he likes him, I don't mean personally. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, he does not like playing against him.
No, he doesn't. No, I would agree, because Beverly is just he's just into everything. You ever have a coworker and you could be talking to another coworker about something, and this other guy comes in, he wants to get into the conversation.
Yeah, I have a little brother. I'm aware how that works.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, like you're planning a trip or something, and your little brother or someone will go, "Hey, you know, you should stay at this hotel instead of that hotel." And you say, "Dude, this is an A and B conversation. You just stay in your lane." But Pat Beverly's like, "God, he's not staying in his lane. He's going to be in everything that the Rockets do. He's going to be all over Westbrook. He's going to talk smack to Steven Adams. He's going to get the crowd OKC pumped up. You know, that's just, I agree with you. Westbrook is like, this is a guy I can't stand to play against. I agree with you 100% on that.
He gets frustrated. When Beverly does that thing, because Russ does this thing, I think he gets most frustrated. Specifically when he does that thing where he tries to kind of physically face a guy up. It's like a half face up, half post up. At the elbow, and Beverly always. There was one time earlier this year where Russ tried to go up for, and like he tried to draw a rip through foul, and Beverly just like threw his head back, and Russ didn't, and he didn't touch him. It was great defense. Russell was getting so annoyed. He was getting so annoyed. It was unreal. But he doesn't yell at Beverly. When Russell gets annoyed, he yells at the referees. And that's going to be something that will be interesting in this series too, because he was getting so annoyed. And it's interesting also because he almost never gets annoyed with point guards. He'll get annoyed with wings.
Interesting.
He'll get annoyed with wings. He is fine for the most part. I mean, Patrick Beverley is the exception. He's the one exception, I think. I don't think he cares when Chris Paul guards him. And Chris Paul is maybe the best defensive point guard in the league. Like, has an argument. I mean, Beverly has an argument for best defensive point guard in the league, too. But Chris Paul has that argument as well. I mean, he is a tremendous defensive player and just had another fantastic defensive season. But I don't think Russell feels that way with Chris Paul, because Chris Paul guards a little bit differently. He's annoying. And there are a lot of guys who hate Chris Paul.
Right.
A lot of players out there who just, if you just talk to them and you don't put a mic in their face and you just kind of say, "So what do you think of Chris Paul?" They won't even give you an answer. They'll just make a face, you know. so no one likes playing against Chris Paul. But I think Russell, you know, he I don't think he loves it when he actually really likes Kawhi. But I don't think you know, I don't think he doesn't talk about any opponent. He does not give props to any opponent. He usually says when you ask him, because he doesn't watch. He'll study occasional game film, but he doesn't sit down and watch basketball on a Thursday night. He's not watching TNT. He doesn't do that stuff. And he doesn't like talking about stuff. So his go-to answer with everything, whether it's true or not, if you ask him about another player, he's like, "I don't know, man. I don't watch him. We'll have to see." And that's what he says every time, every single time, except with James, because they're friends, and James he gives props to, and Kawhi. I think he appreciates that Kawhi just plays. Like, doesn't do anything else and just plays. But he, when he gets big wings on him, you'll see him get a little annoyed. But point guards, man, every time there's a point guard on him, he just goes at him. Every time. And if he gets frustrated, it's because maybe he's not playing particularly well on the point guard, because he feels like he should kill every point guard that guards him. He feels like only wings can... I don't think he feels like anyone can stop him, but he feels like only wings can have some sort of minimal effect on him, and that's his mentality. But except for Patrick Beverly, man, he gets annoyed at Patrick Beverly.
And I think that's part of the reason. That's another reason why I think the Rockets win, because the first point was when I said the Thunder, I don't know who else can help Westbrook. The other one is Pat Beverly defensively is going to be a pain in the neck for, you know, the MVP candidate. And it's just that's how it's going to be. And I think that's something that the Thunder are going to have to figure out, how to keep him – I'm talking about Russ – how to keep him calm and on point, so that when these moments happen, and they are going to happen, then he's got to try to keep his team in the game somehow. And I don't know if he can by himself.
Well, I before you go, I got to congratulate you on getting.
What can I do?
You're gonna get to cover a series with Steven Adams and Enes Kanter, and you're gonna get to realize what the greatest quotes in the NBA really are. You're gonna see.
I do like your locker room. A lot of media people can't stand Westbrook, but I like some of the things that he says. You know, and Cantor too. And yeah, you guys have a good locker room.
Yeah, it's the easiest thing in the entire world is interviewing Stephen Adams. It is truly the easiest thing that a human being. It's the easiest part of my job. I just Zach Lowe made a joke earlier this week that a Stephen Adams interview can go great if you just turn on the tape recorder for 30 minutes and then go to sleep. And a Stephen Adams interviewer can go great. Like even last night, like during that Oscar, they had that Oscar Robertson ceremony, and Oscar said that Russell's the MVP at the end of a ceremony. Mm-hmm. And you see Adams and Cantor in the background just like freaking out. They start punching each other and fist bumping. They're like the Bash Brothers from Mighty Ducks. And like they just start smashing each other and screaming. And I asked Steven about it after the game because it was absurd. And Steven's response was, in short, he said, He said Oscar's been around for a while, and then he said he's like our Oracle. So when he did it, we were like, "Yeah, boy, he's our boy."
He used the word Oracle, really?
Yes. He said he's like our Oracle, and then he said when he did it, we were like, "Yeah, he's our boy." And I was like, "Oh my gosh, Steven, you are another creature. He is." He's great. I mean, you talk about angry, you know, Russ staying on point. Steven had a really good quote about that the other day when someone asked, like, are there times where you try to get Russ angry? Do you want to get him angry? And Steven said, oh, no, I never want to get him angry. If I do, I get in trouble. So yeah, congrats. Congrats on getting to cover Stephen Adams for a series. I promise you'll enjoy.
He'll be the best. That's good. I like Stephen Adams.
He makes more on the record jokes about the male anatomy than any athlete in NBA history. Like on the record to the microphone. We're coming up on the anniversary of my favorite Stephen Adams quote ever. Which is now the second time that I've mentioned it on the podcast this week, but it's really worth mentioning every time it gets mentioned, which is when last year Enes Kanter went 12 for 13 at a game, and and Anthony Slater, when he was still on the beat, asked Adams, like, Kanter went 12 for 13 tonight. What'd you think of his performance? And Adams just responds, he's swinging at the knees.
He said, swinging at the knees.
He said he's swinging at the knees. There's a video of it on Twitter. I will send it to you when we are off, and you will laugh like crazy.
Like Stephen Adams. This is going to be a good series for quotes. It's going to be a good series for quotes.
It is going to be a good, because Beverly has some good quotes when he like gets emotional. Who's the best quote in the Rockets?
Pat Beverly.
Yeah. Ryan Anderson can be really good in my experience too.
Ryan Anderson, he's a good kid. He's a good kid. He'll give you something good every once in a while. But you know, Beverly is, you know, with their best team in the NBA. You know, this guy's taking rest is BS. You know, Pat Beverly, without a doubt, is going to be very, very good. He's going to be good theater. It's gonna be good theater. I don't think it's gonna be a long series. I think the Rockets are gonna win in five, but I think the quotes are gonna be good. The drama's gonna be good. It's gonna be a lot of MVP talk, you know, in this series.
And we're gonna see some great individual performances. Like,
I agree.
I think there's gonna be at least one Russell Westbrook game. Mm-hmm. Like, there's gonna be at least one game where Russell Westbrook just, you know, goes crazy on the Rockets and the Thunder win because he was unbelievable. And there's going to be at least one James Harden game where, you know, Harden just, you know, has one of those, you know, 38 and 15 and 13 games, and they win just because of that. And those games, the Harden game, the Westbrook game, the multiple Harden games, the multiple Westbrook games, those will be great.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. Westbrook's going to win one game. It wouldn't surprise me if the Thunder get a split here, because that's just how this series is. That's how unpredictable it could be. It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I kind of – so I'm going Thunder in – or Rockets in seven. And
wow.
Yeah, I just couldn't pick the Rockets to win game six on the road. Clinchers are usually at home, and I thought five seemed a little bit too short because I kind of think we're going to get – I kind of think Russ is going to win two games. I think Russ, like, they're going to win one at home because Russ goes off, one on the road because Russ goes off, and who knows what's going to happen with this stuff. Like, you know, we're making it up as we go along. No one knows what's actually going to happen.
Right.
But I just I think Russ is good enough, and that he can win two playoff games even against a really good team just because of his individual performance. And I just didn't want to pick the Rockets to clinch the series on the road. So five wouldn't shock me at all. If it were five, I think it would be like a good five game series. But
yeah.
But I went seven just because, like, six is the one that feels right. If they're all on neutral courts, like, six feels right.
Right.
But I kind of felt like I should go seven because of that.
No, I can see that. If the Thunder win this series, seven is probably the best number to go at, because some of these games are going to be close. You know, the last game was a blowout, but it got close because Westbrook took over late. So, but like I said, if Thunder have some help with your boy, it can be a seven game series, no doubt, without question. But we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. You got anything else before we go?
No, that's it. I'm gonna go to cleaners today and make sure I have enough dress shirts.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, man, I'm gonna be in Houston for such a long time.
Let's see. You getting Friday?
And I'm leaving Thursday, so I'm there for 6 days.
Wow. So I'm in OKC. We're in OKC for 4 days.
Yeah, because there are two off days between one and two.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
It's a lot. It's a lot, and then I'm going down a day early for a Rocket story. So it's a lot. I'll be in Houston for a long time. I got to hit up what's that really good deli that was recommended to me last time?
I don't know. There's a good deli. I used to do barbecue.
Yeah, I know the barbecue spots. Got that, obviously.
Did Jonathan tell you about a deli spot? Because he's from Jersey, so he would know.
Jonathan told me about the deli spot. Jonathan told me.
I would have to get with Jonathan. I'm about to ask him when I see him.
He said it's really good. He said it's like New York quality deli pastrami and corned beef and all that stuff.
Really?
Yeah. Shockingly, there is no New York quality pastrami in Oklahoma City.
Shockingly, I'm shocked by that.
Who would have ever guessed that?
Yeah.
All right, Calvin, you got anything to plug? Anything coming out or Twitter or whatever?
I got a story coming out soon on why I think James Harden makes his teammates better, but I don't know when it's coming out. It's supposed to come out soon, but you know how that goes. It's up to the bosses.
Yeah, it's always up to the bosses.
Yep.
All right, and Calvin, you're just Calvin Watkins on Twitter, right?
Yeah, I'm at Calvin Watkins. Yeah, on that thing called Twitter. Yeah.
On that thing called Twitter. And Calvin covers the Rockets for ESPN, and you can find my stuff on normantranscript.com. Check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site there. Find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FredKatz. And you can hit me up with questions there. You can also email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. I'm going to be back with you guys on Sunday nights. They're playing late Sunday night, 8 o'clock Central start. Weird start time.
It is a weird start time, but I'm going to take a long nap that day. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, maybe. It's an 8 p.m. Central start on Sunday. Game two is Wednesday night. I think that's a 7 o'clock Central start. Game three, they come back to Oklahoma City for Friday, and then game four is back on Sunday again. But I'll be down in Houston. I'm leaving on Friday, and I'll be podcasting again after the game on Sunday. So until then, thanks to Calvin. Thanks to Jonathan. Lockdown Thunder is locking up. We'll be right back.
High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate, and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 10-2 to 10-10. Select styles only.